The seven last words of Christ. The scriptures teach us that from the sixth hour until the ninth hour, Jesus hung on the cross of Calvary. The road that led up to that hilltop was one that had been traveled many times before, and even by others who were to be crucified in a similar manner. It was a way and a hilltop upon which men were to be made example of. Whatever behaviors the condemned one had been caught in would be more fearfully avoided by the rest of society if the pain and suffering and embarrassment and violence was severe enough. Jesus's way of the cross was an overwhelming chaos, probably much greater than others who had carried crosses to Golgotha, and it was more disturbing than any other. For Jesus, there was a special crowd who accompanied him along the way, some weeping, some mocking, some thrilled to see Jesus finally suffering, some devastated that their Lord was now in such shameful array compared to his miraculous reception just a week before, and others who were so afraid of this fate for themselves that they fled altogether. Amongst those who fled were most of his disciples. The chaos and fear was too great for them. But when Jesus was finally nailed to the cross and raised up, and everyone had had a good look, the crowds largely dispersed. When the sky became strangely dark, few but the soldiers assigned to stand by remained. It is these 3 hours that we observe now, 3 hours of silence and contemplation, 3 hours of envisioning our Lord, abandoned there on that cross as he suffered, 3 hours of considering the seven last words that he said. It's perhaps fitting that a good period of time should pass before a practice like the 3 hours devotion should develop. The church, having centuries to consider and to contemplate just who this one was who stretched out his arms on the cross to save the world from death by his own death. Time had passed such that by creeds and councils and commentary and fathers and confessors and theologians and saints, we can now return to this hill and rather than become more complacent or even afraid, become more astounded at the miracle of our redemption. Two different realms came together in the person of Jesus Christ, and both came to a climactic moment on Good Friday. Jesus Christ, fully human, was bleeding there and suffering in a way that those who saw him understood all too well. Anyone who had ever suffered even the slightest injury of the body could shudder in sympathy with being pierced through hands and feet and side. Anyone who had been hit even once in a schoolyard fight would wince to see that human body beaten so defenselessly. And worse, anyone who had been abandoned or betrayed by friends or even family could see that this one, who had been followed by crowds of thousands, hoping to hear his words and receive his healing touch, or even just to see his face, this one was now abandoned and betrayed by his own disciples. Can there be a more human experience than feeling alone? Two thieves were crucified with him, one on either side, and they were witness to the humanity of Christ, assuredly. Perhaps here we have a clear picture of how even those close to Christ at his crucifixion could have radically different interpretations of his words. It seems that at one moment they were both cursing Jesus and resentful that the end of their lives would be overshadowed and subsumed by the spectacle of his death. But at some moment, one of the thieves seems to have changed his mind. His heart was changed to one of devotion and worship. The other remained spiteful and could see only his own peril, it seemed. The words that Jesus spoke from the cross, when considered from that immediate temporal and human perspective, are sufficient to amaze, convert, and sometimes even harden the heart. Each of these seven last words has to be, first of all, considered according to this temporal and immediate and human perspective, but there is, of course, another sense in which the words must be heard. Jesus Christ, in his full divinity, hung on the cross as God of God, light of light, very God of very God, begotten, not made, being of one substance with the Father, by whom all things were made. When he uttered a word from the cross, it could not be only understood by its significance in the immediate moment and for those who were directly within earshot. The words rang down through eternity. They shook the gates of both heaven and hell. Angels, no doubt, shuddered to see the Lord suffer and yet rejoiced to see the approaching victory of God, who is love. Demons and devils, no doubt, laughed to hear his cries of pain and thirst and yet were enraged to hear that still no cursing came from his lips, but rather forgiveness. It is a fascinating thing to understand that one of the very earliest heresies needing to be addressed by the church, and was even addressed in the New Testament itself, was the assertion that Jesus was only divine, a heresy called Docetism. Think of it. The earliest witnesses to the ministry of Christ were not tempted to believe that Jesus was only a special man, as Arius would propose 2.5 centuries later, but rather that his actions and words and miracles were so obviously divine that they questioned whether it could have been a real man that was crucified on Good Friday. The divine and eternal nature of his words must also be considered then. And so, with each of the seven last words of Christ, consideration will be given to both their temporal and their eternal import. The anticipation of the hour was over. Jesus' hour had truly come. And by the sixth hour of that day, noon, the worst had happened already. The betrayals, the fleeing, the denials, the false trial, the scourging, the carrying of the cross, the nails driven through, we're all done now. And the world for all eternity now had 3 hours of relative silence to look. Time and eternity had 3 hours now to listen. Heaven and earth had time to genuflect and pray.